Bert comes back. Meredith proves that she is more than a pinup girl, and Molly used to be a nurse. Stay tuned.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the after show for Reprisal. Today, we are talking season one, episode 6.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
For the Love of Archipelago.
That's quite a difficult word to say.
That I'm gonna butcher so many times throughout this show. Please bear with me. I am trying. We are back here today discussing all things Reprisal. I'm Latoya Blakely, your host, and with me is a diamond, my wonderful, wonderful co-host, crime and suspense connoisseur.
Yahoo! Hey guys, what's up?
Hey guys, what's up? That's what she said. Okay, we have a lot to talk about today. We always have a lot to talk about today. It's going to include Queenie going back to get Bert, Meredith and Gertrude plot to leave, and we find out that a lot of our characters are connected. There's one special thing that connects a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Before we jump into the specifics, Diamond, tell me your general thoughts on this episode.
Yeah, I'm speechless. I loved it so, so much. Yeah, I don't know. It was great. It was great. They're all great. But speechless. It's just too much to say.
Okay. I also love this episode. I also really liked the growth and development of Lila's character.
Mm-hmm. So you really like that girl.
I like Lila. It's kind of the same thing we've been hearing, just being underestimated. You know what I mean? She's this child. She's like small but mighty, and people are underestimating her and or just not giving her any actual thought because to them she's just a child. And I think she's just so smart and like so on point with like the things that she says.
And they're so wrapped into their own world that they just can't see through.
Right. And we find out that like Lila really does understand that something's happening. Like, no matter how much they're trying to protect her, she knows that something's happening. Mm-hmm. Anyway, overall thoughts, a great episode. Mm-hmm. Let's jump right into it. The show opens, mm-hmm. well, we'll get back to how it opens, but one of the first things that we see is Queenie going to get Bert.
Yeah.
What do you think when you see, well, we see Bert first, right? We see this kind of solitude life he's been living.
Right.
He's out by himself. Yeah. He's gardening. He's fixing clocks. Mm-hmm. We see he's
very simple.
Right? He's using a cane. That was one thing that I took note of. I wonder what happened. Yeah. But what did you think about, what were your first impressions?
My first impression was he's living a simple life. And I don't think he ever wants to go back. Mm. I feel like there's no reason. He's so settled in. He's comfortable. You know, when we kind of just go through his life, he just seems content. And so, you know, I was more shocked with Queenie that she knew where he was this whole time. So I thought that was, I feel like what loyalty for to keep it quiet, like not even Joel knew, but Queenie knew. So that shows a lot about their relationship. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting that everybody's like speculating on where he could be or what he's doing, if he's even alive. And she just goes to his house.
Goes right to him. Yeah.
And apparently he's living in his father's house.
Because, maybe. I know why you're saying that.
Yeah. Because she mentioned something about his father. Well, and he says like, you know, I don't know.
She said something. She sees, like, the bowl of vegetables, and she's like, oh, don't tell me you're gardening now. And he says, all this time I thought my father was useless, basically, but he could have all this land and all these crops, and I can't even grow a cucumber.
Yeah.
So maybe
he's
it's his father's
growing corn.
House. Maybe it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know, so we open with Percy, you know, talking about the platoon and all that stuff. And I think that's really, you know, I think it's really vital because then we find out that, like, we kind of go back, flashback. There's, like, a young Bash and you kind of, you find out that he's talking to Bash is talking to Percy and trying to get him to come into this family.
Yeah.
Because they've clearly been to war, and Bash has found this lifeline, which is the brawlers.
Yeah.
And he's trying to bring in his brother.
Right. Right, right.
Percy into this life. So he's not drinking it away.
Right.
And so you kind of see how Percy gets involved, what their relationship was like, and where they knew each other from.
And we'll delve into that deeper later, but that's a good point. That is how the episode opens.
Yeah.
We found out the relationship between Percy and Bash.
Yeah, we ended with Bash going crazy on the last episode because Percy was murdered.
Right.
So yeah, it's like now we're like, now we know why he went so crazy.
Right. One, because of their super close relationship, and maybe there's even some guilt on the part of Bash in terms of you're the reason, I'm the reason, you're even in this organization and in this situation.
And he's also a part of the reason why this could be an issue, because he was one of the men with Bert that killed all their people in the very beginning. Like, so in some way, he's also maybe feeling guilt for doing that. And now this is an issue.
Right, right. So Queenie goes to Bert's place and basically says, like, you've worked so hard to develop this organization, to build this world.
What are you doing?
It's on the brink of collapsing.
Yeah.
And if you care, you need to get back.
Yeah.
And Bert comes back.
Yeah, that kind of shocked me. I feel like...
It didn't shock me. What else was he doing? Nothing. Like, failing at growing cucumbers. What I'm interested to know is, why did he leave in the first place? And why does he now have a cane?
Yeah.
Those are the two things I want to know.
Yeah, killing his sister probably sent him over. He's like, I think that's a little much.
Probably.
I think I might have pushed that one a little too hard.
Maybe.
Maybe murdering my sister wasn't the best idea.
Perhaps. Yeah. But he's only been gone for 2 years. So that can't be it, because Doris was gone for like 7 years.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know they told us about a time.
Yeah. There was. I think Queenie actually said it. Okay. Someone said it.
Okay.
So something happened where he left.
Yeah.
Years after he tried to get Liz's sister.
So he doesn't care about
her
at all. Are they even real sisters? Like,
That's true. We don't know that. But I also want to know, do they think she's dead? Like, I need to know what happened. Did they just drag her, unhitch her, and leave her and think that was the end of it? Like, I have so many questions.
Yeah, or was she in there, like, Kill Bill, like, breaking through the barrier life? I don't know. I feel like the assumption was that she was left for dead, and they thought she was dead.
Yeah.
Because she says something like, they never expected me.
They were so confident in what they did that they never even checked to make sure I was dead.
Yeah.
And if... by chance, I didn't die. They never thought I would actually be a problem for them.
But do you remember, maybe he did know that she might be because he says...
She says, you'll see me again.
You'll see me again. He goes, I know I will. Like, so...
Maybe they meant, like, in hell. You'll see me again in hell.
Maybe.
Who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find out. I thought it was interesting when he shows up. So he shows back at the Brawler's compound.
Mm-hmm. Like he's not, like he didn't just disappear for years.
Right?
Yeah.
But I also thought that the Brawlers who were out there and their reaction to him were kind of strange. Like, they were almost unsure. Like, they just kind of looked at him.
Yeah, I expected more of like a shock.
Right? Like, or like...
Yes.
Whoa!
Like, bow to the king. More of that, like...
Right?
But they were just like... It was very... Yeah, it was unclear what they were feeling.
And it was only the bartender who finally, you know, gave it some reassurance that all was right. And she's like, huh, it's been a while. Should I get you your usual?
Yeah. And you know, even that one guy, his nephew, that weird guy that was in the beginning, I forget what his name is.
Okay.
But he goes up to Bert when Bert's at the bar, and he, like, tries to cheers him, and Bert doesn't even, like, clink glasses with him. So obviously there's something he did and Bert doesn't like him or something. So something's going on there.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like, dang, he threw him some mad shade.
Right.
Just denied the cheers. But yeah, I agree with you. Their reaction was a little unclear.
Right.
Didn't expect that. And I think that if Queenie would have never come to him, he probably would have stayed there as long as possible. Like, I don't think he's dealing with something. Like, he's probably got some postpartum something going on, or PTSD.
Possibly, but he wasted no time swinging back into business once he landed on Brawler's territory.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting everybody riled up for war.
Right. Quickly.
Yeah.
I thought that the whole, like, memorial kind of to Percy's truck. So I guess to Percy and his truck, how they kind of, like...
I don't understand that. It's a weird... I wonder why they do that.
The only thing, right? And I wonder if they do it with everyone or if they did it to Percy because the truck was important. Because when we talked in the beginning, when the scene opened... And Percy's talking to Bash, and Bash is saying, come be with me. Percy's like, no, I just bought this truck, and I worked
2 years.
In 2 days, or whatever he says, to, like, be able to get this truck.
Yeah.
And then I think Bash is like, well, you can work on your truck, like, if you come.
Yeah.
And so I guess the truck, whose name was Thelma, my sister's name is Thelma. So the truck was really important to him, so maybe they paid homage to the truck, and by paying homage to the truck, they paid homage to Percy?
Yeah, because, I mean, it would kind of be disrespectful for somebody to start driving that truck, maybe. Yeah, I don't understand the burning of the property, or I didn't understand, or the walking around it.
Right, right. And then so Bert walks up. He's the last one, I think, to touch the truck and kind of, you know, says his final goodbye to Percy via the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm not sure if this was after he saw Bash.
Who he? Bert?
Bert.
This is after he saw Bash.
The truck thing happens after he saw Bash because he asked the guy who he says was his nephew, where's Bash? And then we see him go to Bash's cabin.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Bash have a moment. Bash seems happy to have him back, not necessarily on the same page as him in terms of, like, what's going to happen, but, like, happy that Bert's back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think we have the truck thing. Then they burn the truck as Bert's giving his battle cry. What did you think about his declaration of war?
I mean, I think that's... I mean, nothing.
You didn't have any thoughts?
Not really. I mean, it needs... I feel like for them, it needs to happen. And I just think it's so crazy that none of them have any idea what's really going on and who's setting all this in motion. And it says a lot about life, like... You may think you know, but you have no idea what's going on. And it's playing out so much. And, of course, Doris is in the center of it all.
Yeah.
So, I didn't have much about it. I knew that he needed to create war as a nice speech, a powerful speech, I suppose. Not too many thoughts on it. I think everybody's kind of getting in the mood of getting ready to go to war. I mean, they were like, yeah, like just like throwing up their staffs, like, yes, like, let's do it. So they're ready to go to war. They want to fight. And they haven't been fighting since Joel's been in, you know, the leader. So
they've
kind of been very living a peaceful life. And so they're ready to fight, I think.
You bring up two good points that they haven't really been fighting since Joel's been the leader. Mm-hmm. And so two things. Joel tells Maddie, you've been itching for war. You've been itching to fight ever since you got here. And
now
I'm telling you that it's not what you're expecting it to be.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a powerful thing because, Maddie has no idea. He wasn't there when this happened, when all of the...
He's just an entitled little...
Right, who thinks this is fun?
Yeah.
Like, to him, this is exciting, this is fun. And I think he kind of gets off on, like, having this power and kind of running things.
Yeah. And he's so gung-ho on the... I mean, he's always preaching about this, I mean, family aspect and the loyalty. Like, I think he's an enthusiast of what it represents. But you're right, Joel is, like, he knows. He's been through it. He's killed his own men in order to create power for the brawlers. Like, he has done some... dark things.
Right.
And the dichotomy of this new enthusiastic, young, naive kid who thinks he's loyal and who thinks he's all about, you know, has no idea compared to what Joel has been through. He's been through hell and back.
Right.
You know, to see that moment where he is trying to get it into his head, like, you have no idea. I think it was very powerful and it was cool to see.
And even in the midst of all of this, Joel is still trying to keep the peace. And I don't remember specifically if Joel and Bert see each other face to face in this episode.
It takes a while.
So it does happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's kind of avoiding him.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Joel and James, who's the leader of the ghouls, have another private meeting, which is interesting. They've had at least two private meetings, if not more. So I think it's so interesting that James and Joel are kind of on these almost friendly terms where they meet privately in each other's homes, in the woods, like wherever, just to have these conversations. And basically, Joel asks for a sacrifice. He asks that the ghouls, that they give up this guy.
And the guy, James, like, we don't know who this person is. We didn't do it.
Right. And Joel is basically like, who cares whether he did it or he didn't do it? Like, we need someone. So he asked for the sacrifice. And James is like, nope, can't do it. Yeah. For two reasons. One, you wouldn't do it. I can't just give up my man like that. And second of all, it's not going to matter to Bert. That's what he says. He's like, with Bert back, Bert wants war. And if Bert wants war, he's going to have war. Right. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so it kind of shows the split that's happening between the brawlers. We have Joel, who's kind of, he wants a peaceful lifestyle. He likes the truth. He likes the fact that they can all live together with little trouble. And then we have Bert, who we don't really know a whole lot about from a firsthand perspective. We just know what we've seen. And Bert likes war. So Bert and Joel have two very different ways of leading, right? And and visions for the brawlers. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's getting deeper and deeper, and we're figuring out more about these characters, and they just get more interesting as we go, and it's great to see. And I'm excited Bert is back. I didn't like his character in the beginning. He seemed like, who kills her sister? I mean, like a coward, you know. But now we get to, we're going to see him in action and see what he's like, and how he managed to get this gang to where it is now, and how he managed, you know, his character and how he got to the top. So I'm glad we get to see that, because we didn't get anything. We got
little snippets.
Little snippets.
And like secondhand information.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, a diamond has a message for our wonderful viewers.
Yes, you guys, please like, subscribe, share. If you're on YouTube right now, comment. Even if you're watching it later, we'd like to know your thoughts. If you're on iTunes, give us a rating. We want to know what you think about us. We love doing the show, and we love that you guys like to participate. So keep it coming. Share with all your friends. And thanks for watching, of course.
And then to give a shout out to our new follower.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for following us. What is television?
Yes, spelled interestingly on Instagram. We saw you. We acknowledge you. We appreciate you. If you want to get involved on this conversation, jump on to YouTube. Jump on to this feed.
Yeah, Instagram, anywhere. Let us know.
Comment. Watch along. Leave us comments. Ask us questions. We'd love to talk to you. I'm like, so much. This show gives us so much, and it's all so good and so important.
Oh, my
important,
God.
Right?
But, okay. Now, I'm coming around to Meredith.
You're coming to Meredith?
Yes. You know how I needed to see.
Wait. Before you come to Meredith.
Okay.
Because this leads into Meredith.
Okay.
Bert's back. Meredith is Bert's daughter. We don't know anything about their relationship. We just know that Meredith is kind of protected because she is his daughter. Bert comes back. I know I'm wondering, is this going to be a daddy-daughter reunion? Are they happy to see each other?
I knew that she wasn't... You know what I thought was weird? That he didn't necessarily come to her first.
Yeah, there was no interaction between them.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's got a lot on his plate, but it's your daughter, man.
Right.
Like, so that was telling about their relationship and his fathering.
And so Gertrude, in my opinion, kind of like uses that to her advantage. Maybe, maybe not. It seems like Gertrude and Meredith have like some solid history, and there's friendship there. Right? And we thought
I can't believe she turned on her.
Loyalty and trust. And so Gertrude tries to get Meredith to leave with her. Meredith is hesitant, and then she agrees. We see her packing up her stuff as Meredith, to Meredith's voice. Yeah, not Meredith,
she's
Gertrude's
got a plan.
Voice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She comes and picks her up. She's on the bike.
They stop to get the drugs because they need to get a...
Is that what they're getting?
Yeah, they needed to get all the drugs so they could sell it on the road and have
money. To get money.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you bring that up. I missed that part. I don't know how I missed that part because I was, like, studiously taking notes. But they pull up, and as soon as that bike shut off, I was already like, what's happening?
I didn't know what was happening until they were like they had, she had the gun pointed to that other chick's head. I didn't know that Gertrude was setting her up. I thought they were there to get the drugs. And I'm like, why? I didn't know where they were going. I don't know. It was just weird. I didn't know what was happening until Meredith felt like stuff was about to go down and she put the gun to her head.
It was amazing.
It was so good.
So, like, I got nervous, like I said, in the very beginning, as soon as that bike shut off. I think Meredith started getting a little nervous, too. And she saw, like, the black ghoul outline on one of the trailers.
Yeah.
And I think she's starting to feel some kind of way. Yeah. When Gertrude turns that corner and goes into that dark.
Yeah, she's walking so far ahead of her, too. I'm like, why is she walking so far ahead of her?
And then she's in this dark, like, warehouse thing.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, Meredith, just go hop on that bike and, like, get out of town.
Get out of there, yeah.
So she walks in.
I'm glad she had her gun.
All these people, she always carries that gun.
Yeah.
And this was such a beautiful thing.
I didn't expect Meredith to have that in her.
I'm not surprised because she'd been carrying that gun and showing that gun. And I just remember, I think it was, like, episode 2 or 3, when Maddie takes her to go get the bike and he's like always protecting you and she pulls that gun out and she's like, yeah, even though I don't need you to.
I know, that's good because you were right to know that she was capable. I just didn't think, I thought she just, you know, people have a gun to protect themselves, but when you're in that situation, it's telling what you do. Do you fight or flight? So I didn't know she'd fight.
And well, they say, like, don't get a gun unless you're ready to use it.
Yeah.
And when she pulled that trigger, she also looked surprised.
She
right?
turned her head and shot. She
right.
like had to turn her head to do it.
But
she did it.
She wiped out that entire room.
I know.
Okay.
It was so good.
There's so much to break down in just this scene.
And it was exactly what I needed to see with Meredith. I needed to see her get rid of that way about her, or like own up to it or something. I needed to see justify her something. I didn't believe her,
but she used it to her advantage because the same thing, she pulls that gun, right? So this girl has walked up to her, she's talking whatever she's talking. Meredith understands that this is a bad situation.
Yeah.
She pulls that gun, they all pull guns, everyone's on alert, and she uses that same thing to disarm them. And it's the same thing that Doris kind of does. She kind of leans into her physical, right? And into her persona. Mm-hmm.
Her beauty? Or what do you mean?
Well, she leans into how people perceive her as this pretty, entitled, not that strong
Daddy
girl,
girl. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she leaned into that. And they were like, do you even know how to use it? And she really tells them. She's like,
I don't know how to use the slidey kind.
But this isn't slidey.
Yeah.
And they think it's a joke.
Yeah.
They think it's funny.
Yeah.
And in my mind, no, she's told you. Like, I know what I'm doing. But they literally, like, start lowering their guns.
Yeah, the one guy, he was like,
like, right?
But brings the gun down. I'm like, that was terrible. But, yeah.
And then the other girl who's still holding the gun isn't mm-hmm. as alert. Right? Mm-hmm. And so
they're just there having that gun. I mean, your friend gets shot in the head and you don't shoot the person who shot your friend in the head. Like the girl after Meredith shoots the girl in the head, the other girl behind her who's holding the gun to like shoot Meredith if anything happens, she's like, I don't know, I did it. So like, yeah, and then Meredith goes and shoots the other person.
Yeah.
And Gertrude has her gun, doesn't do anything either.
Right.
Like that's just a group of like.
Well, and I also think because she had disarmed them, you know, like they even.
They're not even ready to have this gun. They're not even ready to carry the guns.
Because they probably didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then after she made what they considered a joke, it's like the difference between having a gun cocked and like ready mm-hmm. and just kind of like loosely having it by your side.
But the thing is she's pointing the gun at them.
Which.
Never bring your gun down if someone's pointing a gun at you.
Doris said, people always underestimate me, and that is my power.
That's
and they
a theme.
Did the exact same thing to Meredith, mm-hmm. And they paid for it. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them paid for it.
And ultimately, they were not capable of having a gun, being in a gang. You know, they just weren't capable of doing it because they didn't even shoot when they're getting shot at. Like, it's just like they're not even the type of people to be in a gang.
Well, I'm sure they would say, playing devil's advocate that they weren't given a chance. Meredith was so quick on it and ready that they didn't have a chance. But I think that just goes to show, like, the ghouls.
Hers was a snap. She knew to shoot
because she didn't have a choice. She was ready.
She had to do it. She's capable. But that's what I'm saying. They're not like a good gang. If you watch your friend get shot in the head and you don't shoot the person, instead you're like, I don't know what to do. It's like, no, you shoot the person who just shot your friend. So they're, you know what I'm saying.
That's kind of a theme though of the ghouls, that they're a little slower to react. And maybe takes it back to that episode where they had the meeting in the street, the brawlers and the ghouls, and Bash is like choking the guy who I now realized wasn't the leader. He was the one that was sent in the leader's place, and none of the ghouls moved.
And I'm wondering, are we going to start seeing the ghouls step up in some way?
They have to. But when Meredith, okay, so rewinding once again, because this scene was so good.
Yeah.
I wrote down femme fatale. I was like, we now have the rise of another, like, textbook femme fatale who's used her female prowess to, like, not get revenge, but to protect herself. She's covered in blood. She has on this pinup girl outfit, covered in blood. She walks out and just puts those sunshades back on. Mm-hmm. People are standing outside watching.
Yeah, I saw that when she was, like, leaving. I'm like, those guys didn't hear any of the four gunshots. Yeah, like, what are they... It's gonna, like, that's weird.
So okay. Then I was like, well, maybe they're not ghouls, like those people. But I thought they all lived together. I don't know.
I just find it weird that it's just, I don't think it was necessary to have those people standing out there in the scene. It just didn't make sense. But yeah.
But she leaves. She gets on Meredith's, Gertrude's bike.
Just takes it.
And she rides away.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah. I was really impressed with her. And oh, and that, and when Ethan and the three, when they come and they pick her up, and he gives her, talks to her about, like, how to breathe. My hands are numb and my feet are numb. And he's like,
after she
shoots them, and they go to pick her up at the gas station.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
Where was I?
But he's talked to her. I thought that was a good moment between them when he's like, they were doing the breathing thing. He's like, breathe in through your nose, hold one nostril, and then breathe out and do it the other side. I like that moment between them.
Finally,
I know. She liked something about Meredith. She had to murder some people in order for me to like her.
And that made me a little dark over there. It was such just a great scene, a beautiful scene. And we have to acknowledge, Gertrude did not shoot. Yeah. Meredith kind of calls her out, like, this is what you did. You set me up. And Gertrude says they didn't leave me a choice. And maybe that was true. Like, maybe Gertrude really didn't want to, because she could have shot Meredith if that's what she really wanted to do. And she even said to Meredith, she's like, you're out of bullets. Meredith says, I am, but you're not.
Yeah.
But Meredith did not move that gun. She didn't put that gun down. She kept it aimed, and she walked out.
Yeah.
And Gertrude let her.
Yeah.
So, maybe there was some truth. They didn't give me a choice.
Well, that's a really interesting, that moment, Gertrude's going to come back at some point. And I think they could have rode in that... Meredith had one more bullet left, but for some reason they didn't, because they want us to see something about Gertrude.
For sure.
That there's some guilt there or something, and she's going to be back. And she, like, Meredith lies to Bert about killing Gertrude. Do you remember that part?
I think you may be getting episodes mixed up.
Maybe seven?
Yeah. I think you're bleeding in, because I really watched this scene, and like, you're saying things that I'm not aware of.
Spoiler alert.
Shit, guys.
Shame on you.
I'm just ruining everything.
That's just what happens when you watch too many episodes at once. She's prepared for you all.
I'm going to find it in my notes.
So, Meredith and Gertrude, that was just a really good scene. It showed us a lot about Meredith and what she's capable of, and Gertrude. And it showed me that maybe the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. I think the difference is Meredith does not enjoy being, like, she didn't enjoy what she did. She did it out of a necessity. But the fact that she was even capable of doing that, like, maybe she's not so much different from her father.
Right. Or anybody else in the group.
Yeah.
And I also wondered, like, did any of the ghouls know that they were doing this? That they were going to try to kidnap?
Probably not, right?
Bert's daughter? Like, did anybody have any clue? Or did these people just take it upon themselves to do this?
Maybe.
And how stupid.
The same, like, that younger generation, right? Like, everyone's, like, rearing their head. They want their chance. They're going to prove that they're big and bad. Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out so well.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness.
You guys, let's take a little moment here. And we want to just If you're on YouTube right now, please like, subscribe, share, comment, join in on the conversation. If you're on iTunes, rate us. We want to know what you think, of course, all the time. We love doing this, and we love that you guys participate with us, so keep it coming. Also, on Instagram, we're always posting about everything we're doing here, so...
You do know you already did this, right?
Did I? In this one?
Yes, this is what happens.
This is what happens when you go out on Saturday night and you come on Sunday and you're just delirious.
So, in case you missed the message the first time,
okay, you
thank
guys.
You for making AfterBuzz TV the TV talk of entertainment news.
I did this already.
Rate, subscribe, comment, please do. That's how badly we want you to do it. Thank you, Diamond, for being on top of it. We are
so on top of it
to keep moving. I just have to. This isn't on.
But hey, okay.
Let's just talk about Lila. I just want to, like, talk about Lila for just a hot second. You know I love this character.
You love her so much.
Bash is reeling, right? So he's gone. He has gotten revenge against the ghouls.
He's, in a depression now.
He is extremely depressed. Yeah. Bert's back. He's happy to see Bert, but that doesn't make him feel better. Lila, my favorite character of this show, shows up with Rufus.
Oh, yeah, her little stuffed animal.
Right?
Yeah.
And she gives it to Bash, and she says, first of all, that she calls Joel Daddy-o. Daddy-o told me that you're sad. And Bash is like, I'm not sad. And she's like, yes, you are.
Yeah.
And when I'm sad, I just hug Rufus, and he takes all the sadness out of me.
Yeah,
I need my body. Rufus, right? Yeah. Like, I need one of those dolls. And she says, you can have them, but I'm coming to get them before a bad time.
Yeah.
And I just love this child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lila could have had her own segment. And
spinoff.
Right? When she sees Doris. There's so much to talk about. Okay.
That was really unexpected.
Let's do this quickly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no, let's jump into it. Doris goes by herself because they're all going to be distracted.
Can we rewind for like a half a second?
Yeah.
And so I really loved in this episode, there was a lot of like give in terms of like trust building. It's the first time we see Doris frustrated. She's calling Ethan and he's not answering. So then she checks the phone
to make
sure it's working.
He throws the phone.
In the woods.
In the woods.
Like breaks it up, throws it in the woods. And Doris is first time we've seen her do this.
Yeah.
She like bangs.
Yeah.
And then
we pan out and we see that they're all just staring at her and she's like, like she has this moment of like, go on, like the phone. And then she does it in front of them. Yeah, we see her
lose it. And then she comes back to Doris and she says, he must be busy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So great.
Sure.
I love her. She's so good.
And then she walks out and Earl goes to follow her. Mm-hmm. He doesn't ask her any questions. In the room, he says something about like, he calls you Catherine. And he called you Catherine, I think is referring to Percy called you Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
And she walks out of the room. She doesn't respond. So he follows her. And then instead of asking her a question, he leads with information. Mm-hmm. And he starts telling her about his son and what happened.
Yeah, then breaks down the walls.
Right.
Yeah.
Then Doris asks for the name of the son. He doesn't answer. So then Doris gives him information. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, he tells her the name of the son.
Mm-hmm.
But also what was beautiful is she said something about Alvin. No, he said something about Alvin. And she was like, Alvin, you mean you're not Alvin? And he was like, whoa.
He's like, we haven't even met.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he finally tells her that
his
name is Earl. So then she says, I have this thing to do. You all stay here. The brawlers are going to be busy. I need to go check out this road, and I have a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes
to
Bash's.
So they go, and they go to... She's, like, walking into their community, and she notices that Bash is...
The radio.
The radio, and the light's on. And she goes in there. And at first I thought... I'm like, well, I didn't know what she was going into or what room she was going into, and she's, like, going to shoot somebody. I'm like, who's she going to shoot? I'm like, there's no way she's going to shoot Bash. That'd be so ridiculous. I don't know. I'm like, what? I don't think she would have been able to do it. Anyways, so she goes in there. She's faced with an ultimatum. Is she going to do this? Is she not going to do this? and your best friend walks in.
And Lila walks in and saves Bash, even though, yeah, I'm not sure that she would have been able to pull the trigger. That was the first time she hesitated. Mm-hmm. And to me, it looked like she didn't expect Bash to be there, and she sees him.
Yeah.
Then she pulls the gun, and then Lila comes.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
To pick up her...
Rufus.
Yeah.
Because she said, I'm coming back for bedtime. Mm-hmm. So, and you said in the last episode that Doris with Molly made you think that Doris would have been a good mom, the way she treated Molly after Molly did the thing. Mm-hmm. Seeing her with Lila, that was my exact same thought. Like, oh my gosh, she would be so good with children. Mm-hmm. And it amazes me how Doris can kind of like volley between like killer and super prim and proper motherly, together, right? Yeah. And so that gun goes behind her back. She gets to know Lila. One of my favorite lines is Lila says, are you a friend of Bash's? She says, yes. And then Lila says, well, that means you're a friend of mine. And so they have their moment. Then this bird comes out.
This was the gift she was going to give them already. Anyways,
I think that was
It's so weird. Like, is she trying to make them know that she's coming for them? Like, why would she drop any clues anywhere?
Yeah. We don't know the answer to that, but that's what I was thinking. Because if she didn't want to leave that bird, the canary, she wouldn't have left it. But and she had already said, I have an anniversary gift. Like, I have a gift. So I was thinking that was it.
Maybe she's getting overconfident. I think she's like, I know, like,
maybe
it's, I know that my plan is going to succeed, so I'm going to give them this clue, give him this clue or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to kill them all anyways or what have you.
Yeah.
So I think she got a little too cocky.
Well, I also, and I love Lila, when she says, as she's taking Rufus back and she tells Doris, like, I think this is the gift. This is why I say this child is clairvoyant. She says, this is the gift that Bash needs, this yellow canary. So I'm going to take my doll back. You need to leave this.
And she's like, uh-oh.
Right?
But wasn't she going to give that to her anyways?
Maybe. That's what I'm speculating.
It's very unclear.
Right?
Yeah.
But the fact that this child, who seemingly does not know what's going on, has enough, like, intuition and instinct to know, like,
she's
this is what Bash needs.
Yeah.
It's more, to me, it's more than emotional intelligence, but we can call it whatever.
No, she is. She knows that he's hurting and he needs this thing. That's deep emotional intelligence.
Yeah, but it's not that this thing is making Bash feel better, because what it's actually doing is telling Bash that someone from your past is back. That's what it's actually doing.
But do you think she knows that? I think she's doing it because she's taking her stuffed animal back, and she knows that he needs something to take the pain away.
I just think that Lila's a lot smarter than people are giving her
credit. I think you're giving her a lot of credit.
Yeah. I am. So we have Doris. She leaves the yellow canary. She goes on. Lila sees her daddy-o, and she says something to daddy-o about,
the ghost lady?
The ghost with the dark tattoo-like bashes and the yellow canary. And daddy-o says, oh, it was just a dream.
Yeah.
How adult she was in handling going with her mom. Like, they were going to tell her it's going to take some time, and she says, I already know it's going to take some time getting used to.
Yeah.
Lila's coming back.
She's just like, she's too all-knowing. Like, she's too mature, I feel like.
To me, it's
they're
a level
like,
of,
throwing
like...
throwing her some, like, deep information, like, some big information. It's like, it's really cool to, I told you, she's like a narrator, and I love that they're making her this little small child. I wonder what that is representing. But they're making the small child have all this information.
Yeah.
You know, the writers.
Yeah.
You know, what is that? What do you think it's representing?
Yeah.
Because she's always telling some sort of truth. She's reading some report or has some insight or, you know, knows to talk to somebody. Like when she was talking to Meredith, and that girl wanted Meredith to come play with her. You know, like, what is that signifying? What are they trying to... Why are they making her this narrator?
We should try to find out.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. If
you tell us what you guys
let
think.
Let us know.
Yeah. What is Lila's... Like, what are they trying to get us to see?
Yeah.
You know?
Something else that was really interesting about this episode is that we started to learn how a lot of people were connected, either like they knew of the relationship, and then a lot of them shared.
There's a through line with all of them. Almost,
right. Yeah. Shared similar experiences without knowing it. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things that we learned was that Percy fought in this archipelago battle. And so when Bash goes to recruit him, it's after he's come back from this battle, and Bash says, like, don't drink your life away, come be with us. Then we later found out that Cordell and Earl served as well in this battle. Molly was a field nurse in this battle. And then the person that came up with the idea of the monster ring was also in this battle. And that's who Alvin was. Alvin was the platoon leader to Cordell and Earl. And when he came back, it was his idea to start the monster ring.
Yeah, and it was also the idea to have Earl's son
participate. And that's how the son, who we found out is 13 years old, gets killed. Yeah. What do you have any thoughts about whether it's the son, Alvin, this battle that brought them all together?
Well, I think that we're going, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think it's a very interesting through line. I don't know why. I think it's just like life. The world is smaller than it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're finding out that eventually at some point it's in the stars. You know, for them to have been together and meet, because they've just been right next door.
Yeah.
You know, and they are all connected, not just through Dottie, but through somewhere else, through this battle.
For sure.
So I thought that was interesting. Very serendipitous.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we've been kind of trying to figure out with this show is a time frame.
Yeah.
Like, what year is it? Mm-hmm. And so when they talked about this battle, I got really excited because I thought that it was a real battle. So this leads us into our special segment.
Yeah.
We are learning about Archipelago.
Yeah.
Because I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I got really excited about this battle, and I was like,
when was it? What's happening?
Right? Yeah. Like,
time frame.
We can nail down a time. And so what we've learned is that Archipelago is the name of an island group or island chain.
Yeah, cluster of islands.
Right. So Archipelago alone is not the name of an island, right? But like,
there are different island names. Like there's Pangway, or I'd have to like look it up. But
so
different battles on different islands.
Right.
But the cluster is called the Archipelago Islands.
Right. The cluster of islands is called Archipelago Islands. Mm-hmm. And so there was a battle around World War II or part of World
early
War
II. 1940s, yeah.
But we know this show can't be in the 1940s because they have flip phones.
Yeah. But they look like 1950s outfits,
yes.
except for Earl
and Cordell.
They're like modern day because their masks and their outfits, even when they were running into the bowling alley, like that's of our time. So, yeah.
So, Archipelago.
Yeah.
A cluster of islands. There was a battle around 1952 that had to do with...
42.
That had to do with the Chinese nationalists and the communists.
Yeah. So, interesting. It actually was a battle. So, that's cool.
A real thing. Yeah. So, if we have any viewers who are history buffs or geography experts who can chime in and help us further this discussion, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. And what do you guys think about
the
style choice for the time frame? Like, what were the writers thinking? Like, the show creators, like, what is with that?
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
What do you guys think? What do you guys think is going on? Because we obviously the flip phone is not a part of our time now, or the time in 1942. Yeah. But they are connected through this battle that happened somewhere in the World War II. So, and then of course the two guys who like dress like modern day.
Yeah,
so
for
it's
sure.
So interesting. Tell us what you guys think. We really want to know.
You guys, thanks so much for joining in. We are out of time. Where can people find you?
You guys, you can check me out on Twitter and Instagram at NotYourType, NOT_YUR_TYPE. And I'm a Diamond Baker.
I'm LaToya Blakely. You can find me on Instagram at LaToya period Blakely, on Twitter at Blakely period LaToya. We have enjoyed you. We've enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. And until next time, bye.
You later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.